Good afternoon. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Hakaminam-speaking Musqueam people from the University of British Columbia. And this is Shoes on a Wire, a brand new show by me. My name is Madeline Taylor. And yeah, thanks for tuning in. It is Wednesday afternoon here at 4:01 p.m. So I was talking with someone the other day about starting this radio show and asked what they thought of the title, Shoes on a Wire. They looked at me and said, in Winnipeg, we used to think shoes on a wire meant you could buy drugs nearby. So this isn't exactly what I was expecting. Whenever I see shoes on a wire, it strikes me as a shame for whoever's feet they are missing. I wonder about how many throws it took them to land and whether it messes with the birds who usually occupy the spot. But mostly, it's an image that takes me out of my everyday wandering thoughts and pulls me into the moment. That's what I want this show to be for you, the listener. A chance to consider things in a different way and give you a break from the daily buzz. So on today's show, I have a reading and interview with Cree Métis author Carly Baker, an interview with the organizers of East Van's Best Queer Parties, and some hot takes on a certain disgraced CBC radio host and his quote-unquote comeback. But first, here's pop electronic artist Stefana Fratilla with her new track, Dancing.
Let me run it for you.
Definitely.
Carly Baker is a Cree Métis Vancouver-based writer. Her new collection of short stories, Bad Endings, was published by Anvil Press on March 15th of this year. On International Women's Day, she joined me on air to read her short story, Exotica. We also spoke about family, her origins, and her relationship to Métis culture as one raised as an outsider. Tonight, there's a launch party for Bad Endings at the Book Warehouse on 4118 Main Street. So here is Carly Baker reading Exotica, followed by our interview.
Melanie is mad. I can tell by the way she's picking at her nails. Really long nails, lilac-colored with little crystals. Pick, pick, pick. She has a new Coach purse in lilac. I was there when the UPS man delivered it yesterday. In the Yukon, you shop by mail. She has lilac throw cushions coming in the mail, too. She and Don have two cars and a nice duplex in Tokini, up on 2 Mile Hill. A view of the city. It's all about the view, Don had said, standing on their porch with a scotch in his mitt. I don't get that. The White Horse view is all skinny trees and exfoliated hills. I guess you have to imagine Jack London in there somewhere, running around in a fur loincloth, even though Wikipedia says he wasn't actually up north for very long. I shouldn't have had so many beers. Xander and I shouldn't have had so many beers at that old-timey northern bar this afternoon. Or was it this morning? Time is disappearing. Melanie said they wanted to hike tonight in the midnight sun. Midnight Sunday hike on McIntosh Mountain, where the Olympic cross-country skiers train. The pre-hike tailgate party at the base of the mountain was Xander's idea. He's an ideas man. My man. Bison burgers and wheat beer with orange slices. Orange? No lemons, Melanie says. It's not always easy to get fresh citrus up here. Savages, Xander snarls. He spits into the barbecue. Melanie's eyes widen. Pick, pick, pick. Light all the time. The northern solstice is pulling the top off my skull and I feel like a new age cliche. The motifs are ravens, raven lunatics, and the ubiquitous light. Midnight sun in the coffee and pushing through the blackout blinds. The smells are lavender oil on the 600 thread count pillowcase I lay my head on at night and pine in the air. Pine down at the footbridge over the green Yukon River, still a tangle of current even with the rapids blasted out. The trees are so scrawny here. The colors are red roses on the sheets and green rivers in the waking hours, but the light is inescapable, so where does that leave us? With magnets in our heads, nodding toward the poles. You should go see the Midnight Dome, Don says. No, really, you should go. The sun comes down and touches the horizon, and then it rises again. The Midnight Dome is in Dawson City, 8 hours from Whitehorse. When I lived up north, an 8-hour drive was not a big deal. That was a long time ago, years before Melanie and Don had ever been to Whitehorse. I think we'll stick around, I say. Melanie and Don look down at their fancy hiking shoes. So, ready to hike? Pick, pick, pick. Melanie's gonna have to get new crystals put on. She and I were good friends at university, but she's been up north for a long time. Hold on, I say, one more round. You can drink while we walk, Don says. I'm tired of waiting. I feel like a new age cliche because I want to talk about dreams, but what else is there to talk about in this sleep wakefulness? My daytime self is nearly incoherent, but my nighttime self is busy writing happy endings to stress dreams, the ones lucidity usually cuts off before the finale. Frantic packing for a flight I know I'll miss, but last night, or was it this morning, I filled dream suitcases leisurely in black and white comic strip frames. Goodbyes in thought bubbles. Shook hands with my ex-husband and flew away. To Xander. A happy anti-climax. How did you guys meet? Melanie narrows her eyes at Xander. He's much younger than me. Poetry class, Xander says. Puts an orange slice in his mouth and gives her a citrus grin. That's cheesy, Don laughs. He's much older than all of us. Xander shrugs, spits out the rind. Her husband caught us in bed. I was reading Rumi to her between thrusts. He had a dozen red roses and he threw them on the floor when he saw. Lovers in a Dangerous Time was playing. Ha, I say, wishing I had an irreverent cigarette to light. The roses part is true. There's a disc golf course at the base of the mountain. Old guys with silver ponytails and three Wolf Moon t-shirts are smoking weed. They nod, we nod. There's the 10-kilometer World Cup trail, Don says. That may be a bit much for you guys. He has short legs and a bit of a paunch, face shaped like a pear. He's lost weight since the last time I saw him at their wedding. It must be the gluten-free diet Melanie's got them on. Are you kidding? I say, Xander will carry me. He burps. That's right, honey. It's a black diamond trail, Melanie says. Sure, on skis, I say. Don't worry about us. Just take us to the best view, Don. He smirks a little. Okay. Even when we start to climb and the beer makes me wheeze a little, I keep up. We have to keep moving or the mosquitoes close in. They're much bigger up north, and they can latch on even in a stiff breeze. They bite along the hairline, on eyebrows, and easily right through denim. Bastards. The trails are wide and rolling, speckled with lupin and yarrow and some other tiny pink flower Melanie can't identify. Do you find the solstice makes you a bit squirrely? I ask her. Huh? The corners of her mouth turn down. No. Nothing? No funny dreams? No insomnia? It's the light, she says, but it doesn't bother Dawn and I anymore. Wildflowers and sunlight and dreams. There must be something else to talk about. Unicorns? I say aloud. What about them? Melanie says. Nothing. Up ahead, Dawn and Xander are not making man conversation. They're not making any conversation at all. Another dream from last night, free running through a Moroccan hotel courtyard, so lithe I'm on strings. This dream is usually a chase scenario set in a Toronto steel and glass venue of elevators trapped between floors. There's usually a bomb or some spies chasing me. This time it's exotic, curved awnings and stone passageways, pink flowered vines trail out of windows. I run for the feel of it, easy keeping ahead of unseen bad guys, and when I have my fill of movement and architecture, I stop. Then there's nothing left to do but walk into wakefulness. I'm laughing at how easy the end is, but it sounds like gasping when I open my eyes in Melanie and Dawn's guest room. Xander rolls an arm over me. It's okay, he whispers, just a dream, it's okay. I realize how seldom I let dreams run their course, preferring a smash cut into consciousness. We come to a one-room cabin with a fire pit out front. It's got a little wood stove inside as well, a couple of empty wine bottles. Someone smoked an entire pack of Craven M's and butted out each one on the wall, 20 black burn marks in a neat line with an empty box on the floor. Do you want to keep going? Dawn asks. I swat at my ankles. I don't think this should be our final destination. Melanie is bragging. Dawn is the head of his department now, and they've asked him to chair the board. Congratulations, I say. What kind of board? Xander asks. Dawn pauses. The Aboriginal Arts Advisory Board. Oh, Xander says, you're going to advise Aboriginals about how to make art? Xander's half Haida. Dawn isn't half anything, I don't think. He clears his throat. It's not like that. No? What's it like? Xander sounds dangerous, but I know he's joking. He loves to push a little. Dawn meets Xander's gaze. We help with grant money, organize shows. Dawn had to work hard to earn their respect, Melanie says. Whose respect? The Aboriginals? Xander grins. Good for him. Turn here. Dawn points to a marker sign painted on a canoe. The canoe is nailed to a tree. For the next few kilometers, we're away from the view into scrub forest. Xander and I walk a little further ahead of Melanie and Dawn. Be nice, I say. These guys think they're a big deal, hey? Maybe they think we think we're a big deal. Xander pats me on the bum. I hadn't thought of that. Me neither, honestly, I say, not until now. Is Xander mad? Melanie asks, when he steps away to relieve himself. Dawn keeps walking. No, I tell her. I'm not sure what else to say. I like him, she offers. He's playful. Yeah, I say. How are things since the divorce? She leans in close. Like, really? That's what the therapist is for, I guess. I don't want to have this conversation now. Not while the northern solstice is pulling the top off my skull and picking around, adding up numbers. But it's nice that she'd ask. Xander rejoins us. Where's Dawn? He asks. I need to let him off the hook. He's up ahead, Melanie says. She points up the path, but keeps her eyes on Xander. I'll run and catch up. Xander zigzags across the path, stiff arms, Mission Impossible style. He's so fit, Melanie says. I'm kind of jealous. I'm jealous of your nails, I say. And it's true, I am, kind of. And the lilac cushions coming in the mail, even though I haven't seen them yet. We walk along, quiet. The sun is as close as it's going to get to setting. We're almost at the view, Melanie says. You'll love it.
That was Carly Baker reading Exotica from Bad Endings. Bad Endings is her brand new short story collection. It was published originally on March 15th by Anvil Press of this year. And there will be a launch party for Bad Endings at the Book Warehouse on 4118 Main Street tonight. Up next is an interview that I did with Carly Baker on International Women's Day, so stay tuned for that. Once again, you are listening to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM. Before you started the story, you mentioned that most of your stories are thinly veiled nonfiction and that you did have experiences living up north with the midnight sun and it driving you a little bit crazy. So if you had to choose, who in that story most reflects you and your experiences while you were up there?
It's the narrator is definitely me in this story, for sure, although not all of the elements are. I mean, I've got a couple of buddies up north. Yeah. This is not reflective of my, love you, Mary.
Yeah.
that is part of who I am, and how when I get a little squirrely, that loss of control makes me so anxious, and I'm not sure if I'm saying or doing the right thing or what's happening, and also just like the perception. I think your perception expands quite a little bit when you're in this sort of destabilized place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of that story.
I noticed that in a lot of the other stories that I read, water was a huge, huge running theme. And in this one, it was a little bit more like plant life, and you brought up Raven. I like the idea of dream suitcases, too. That was a great line that stood out to me. But I was just wondering, how do you see the archetype of Raven playing into the backbone of the story?
Yeah, I should mention that although I am Cree Métis, I'm an outsider. I was raised outside of my community. So I think of the imagery that I use in my stories as nature imagery. I don't try for some kind of false connection with Indigenous imagery. So to be honest, the raven came well in the Yukon. My friend had this coffee cup that I was drinking from one morning that had this raven with these sort of googly eyes that said Raven Lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I just thought, that is exactly how I feel right now. I feel like something is happening with me in nature, and this is a common thing for me, is just like there's some kind of connection here and there's some kind of importance here, but I can't put my finger on what. So I'm just going to focus on the craziness. I love ravens. I love crows. They're sassy and smart, and so it's something I think I would say that I love what they do. And of course, white horse are all over the Yukon making their sort of gonking noises. When I was a kid, when I was a preteen living in Cassiar, which is just 2 hours south of the Yukon border, Yukoners would say that's totally not north, but it was like crazy north compared to what I was used to at the time. My parents and I used to sit on the patio outside and try to like imitate the raven gonks, and the crows were all doing that. They were all doing the clicks the other day here in Vancouver, and I was just like, what's up? Something's in the works, something big.
I love watching crows and ravens once you get into the forest reacting to the weather and your presence and everything. They're pretty influential. They don't fade into the background, that's for sure.
Yeah, it feels like they're watchers, like mm-hmm. they're keeping tabs on you or something. And I don't know, and that's all just instinct that makes me feel that way.
Definitely. My mom is a mountain biker, and when she gets really deep into the forest and she's biking by herself, she says that the ravens follow her, and it makes her feel pretty comfortable, actually. Anyways, that's a nice lead-in. I'd like to talk about your origins. It says in your bio that you were born on Stolo territory, which I believe is Langley. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mission was
Mission.
Where I was born.
Okay. What kind of connection? You mentioned that you don't ascribe to like false connection with Indigenous stories because you were raised an outsider. So I wanted to ask, what kind of connection did you have to your Indigenous roots growing up?
Yeah, it's a bit of a fraught story, but one that I'm happy to tell.
Okay.
Because positionality is important. So I didn't meet I had a challenging relationship with my Métis grandmother growing up. My parents both come from backgrounds, my mom who is settler Icelandic and my dad who is Cree Métis. Both parents came from a background of abuse and alcoholism and occasionally violence. So they made what must have been a very difficult decision to separate themselves from their family members. And we kind of formed this like little Baker island. They moved out into the woods. We sort of just did our own thing. And there were, it's not like I didn't get to know these people, but it's sort of my background was just a series of negotiations, reconciliations, and then breaks with family members in various states of mental health. So I got to know family members, but it was always sort of through this protective veil. We need to protect ourselves from these people because we don't know if they're safe. Mm. My Métis grandmother, Grandma Carrière, she also wanted no part of her Métis ancestry. She wasn't proud of being Cree or French, as it turns out. So it was something that I wouldn't say it was hidden, but it's just one of these things that just doesn't come up. My dad, growing up in Mission had a residential school that was operational until quite late. It was bulldozed, and the land has actually been returned. There's just a memorial on there now, but there's also an interpretive center where you can go and learn about the past of the residential school there. When my dad used to take me to powwows up in the area when I was a kid, but I just want, this was not ever presented to me as this is an important thing that you should know about who you are. Of course, the powwows wouldn't have been, my Métis family comes from the Red River settlement in Manitoba. So it was, it just wasn't a part of who I was. When my grandmother died, there was a sort of a bit of a family reconciliation, and I met my Métis, the rest of my Métis extended family, for the first time ever. And when my dad spread my grandma's ashes into the Alouette River, which was the river that he grew up on, these folks that I didn't really know what to make of them, they're just like such an interesting group of people, bikers and all kinds of folks, sort of like held out their hands as far as welcome to the family, welcome to the community. And then I really quickly did something that is just a really common mistake, I think, for Dr. Chris Anderson has this brilliant book called Métis, and he's coined this term called late onset indigeneity, which is great. And
yeah,
I
great.
Like I bumbled into that like just your stereotypical idiot thinking like, great, well, I'm Métis, this is this blood that I have, awesome, now I'm in. And it's taken years, that was probably when I was about 30, it's taken years for me to understand that you can't step sideways into a community you weren't raised in. So I'm thankful to be a part of my family community and to have reconnected with them. And I'm very excited and always very thankful when members of the community are willing to, I won't even say accept is a weird word, but even just to let me hang with them. But I consider my role to be a settler and an ally. And my job is to elevate Indigenous voices. And I'm lucky that I also get to be a writer and write about that. And I also feel, I guess the last, I feel like I'm rambling on here.
No, you're good.
Okay. I will always write about my own experience. I only consider myself a spokesperson for myself. And I do think that reconnecting with your identity, with your Métis identity, is a shared experience. So I do think that I have a story to tell, but it's not, my job isn't to tell other people's stories. I can tell my own. And that is about someone trying to reconnect and all of the myriad mistakes that I've made and the learning that has happened while I've been doing this. So that's where I want to be as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Baker Island that you mentioned, in your dedication, you thank your parents who, and I quote, are only satisfied when I'm being my true self. And you also talk about your brave sister. So I wanted to ask you about your sister, your relationship with her.
Yeah, we have struggled a lot with mental illness in my family, all of us. So my sister and I share an anxiety issue. This is a challenging thing for me because I don't like to. It's not something about myself that I feel like I'm presenting myself as a victim or something, a victim of anxiety and if that's how some people feel, that is fine. But I have always tried to position myself on the survivor end. Mm-hmm. Now, anxiety manifests itself in many different ways in different people. So me as the older sister and Madeline, the younger sister, I would say it kind of hit us in almost like stereotypical older younger sister ways. I am I'm a high achieving anxious person. I will just like whip myself into the ground in order to succeed. And then as a result, sometimes I have long periods of anxiety induced rest time required. My sister has really been through a lot of challenges with the mental health system. A misdiagnosis for several years that led us all to believe that there was a very different, she was struggling with a very different issue. She has just pulled herself through so much over the years, recognizing issues with addiction and mental health, and she's clawing herself back to a position that she'd like to be in. She's a writer as well. She wrote, this is a long time ago, but it was sort of before dystopian YA was cool. She wrote this amazing, this entire novel. I think she was like 16 or something like that, dystopian YA novel. And I know we'll see it in print someday, I'm positive. She's a singer, and a lot of this stuff had to be put on hold while she was going through this process of evolution, and I'm so proud of her, and I've revealed a lot in my book about our relationship that she hasn't read yet, so hopefully she's cool with that. I love you, Madeline.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think especially relating back to it being International Women's Day, struggling with mental illness and coming to terms with what your capacity is as a woman dealing with mental illness and working through the system itself is so incredibly challenging. And so anyone who has the strength to get through that, be creative, and be open about it, I feel deserves the utmost respect. So, and to be honest, I have a similar relationship with my younger sister. So it's interesting to hear that reflected, that maybe that's a typical thing that people experience all over the place.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it's so important to be able to share those stories as well so that people feel seen when they're experiencing invisible illness in that way.
That was an interview with Carly Baker, Cree Métis author, whose book Bad Endings is celebrating a launch party at the Book Warehouse on Main Street this evening, if you are interested and would like to go. Up next, I've got a song for you from Kim Wardle. This is Brushing by Heaven's Shoulder on CITR 101.9 FM.
Heaven on earth is broken. I wanna give birth to words unspoken, but I'm choking. Everybody trying to be seen on screen, force feed me a scene. I'm just trying to intervene. Too deep for the mainstreams, too street for Ivy Leagues. University is robbing money, still buying coffee, no cream. Telling him in my color of melanin. Got soul, but not a whole lot of green. Too few stop to think, they're busy building the machines. Accumulate the sense, common sense to me. To pennies rhyme lightly, ZZ. I'm tired of the same old shit. Cookie cut that ish, copy paste generic. Locate my remix and my wordplay. Twist, turn the page, study my resist.
As I'm rushing by Heaven's shoulder, I hope I'm getting bolder. But as I'm rushing by Heaven's shoulder, I hope I'm getting bolder.
Call a girl a bitch loud, I'm so rude. In a man's world, working harder than the dude. Do your mathematics, stats on the maxes. Equations, you can't claim on her taxes. My broke back is collapsing from kissing ass. Too fast while the time is ticking.
murdered and missing. Too many women, too many queens dead on the scene. Never forgotten, forever missed. I remember you on my campus. Paint your crown, miss, loud and proud, misunderstood. With this world flipped attitudes, didn't exclude more gratitude. Indigenous lives misconstrued the truth. I used to pray to a white God, now I head nod church in the booth. Cause God isn't no limit, she's in his Adidas, dancing nowhere and in between us. Synonymous to androgynous, you a Nazi. Why do we divide and conquer? Why do we divide and conquer? Seem like I can never finish, like I'm only up for glimpses, expression on the surface. If I'm worth it, don't mean I'm perfect. I'm pushing on a limit, I ain't trying to stay in it. They say you're ungrateful, you think too far ahead. Don't you see what's right in front of you? Use your head. I use my heart instead. I never traded for a ticket to your walking dead. I drop my heart in every track, watch it overflow. Blood, sweat, tears on my mic at the show. Could drown any motherfucker in my ill flow. They'll just say I'm really good for a girl, though. No place in the books written. Out of history's overlooked for crooks, so I keep spitting. For all the aliens, I rise above the clones. And sometimes I feel alone, but the stage is my home.
I'm rushing by heavy shoulder. I hope I'm getting bolder. But as I'm rushing by,
in today's political landscape, more fires are raging out of control than ever before. Will you help put these fires out by registering to vote in BC's 2017 general election? You can vote in advance, mail in your vote, vote on the day of election, May 9th, or at any district electoral office. For more information about the process or to see where you can vote, visit elections.bc.ca. May is Asian Heritage Month, and the Museum of Anthropology is inviting you to celebrate with them by seeing the exhibition Traces of Words, Art and Calligraphy from Asia, on from May 11th to October 9th. Words and their physical manifestations are explored in this exhibition, which will honor the special significance that written forms, especially calligraphy, hold across many unique cultures of Asia, a vast geographical area boasting the greatest diversity of languages in the world. Join MOA for the exhibit's opening with free admission on Thursday, May 11th from 7 to 10 p.m.
Welcome back to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Madeline Taylor, and we are broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people here at the University of British Columbia. In the last half hour, you heard an interview and a reading by Carly Baker. If you're interested, you can go check out her launch party for her new short story collection, Bad Endings, at the Book Warehouse on Main Street this evening. The song you just heard was Brushing by Heaven's Shoulder by Kim Wardle. So this week, a certain former CBC radio host who has been accused of 24 separate accounts of abuse and sexual assault launched a new podcast with an announcement on Twitter. I'm not going to mention the name of the podcast. Instead, I have a request for you. Don't listen to it. Don't listen to him. Don't dignify him with attention. Abusers deserve obscurity and irrelevance. If we wait it out, he'll go back under the rock he's been cowering under since Catherine Borrell responded to his acquittal and apology with her own statement. In case you need a reminder, here's part of her statement from last year, 2016, following his public apology. Quote, "As you know, Mr. Gomeshi initially denied all the charges that were brought against him. But today, as you heard, Gian Gomeshi admitted wrongdoing and apologized to me. It's unfortunate, but maybe not surprising, he chose not to say much about what exactly he was apologizing for. I'm going to provide those details for you now. Every day over the course of a 3-year period, Mr. Gomeshi made clear to me that he could do what he wanted to me and my body. He made it clear to me that he could humiliate me repeatedly and walk away with impunity. There are at least 3 documented incidents of physical touching. the one charge that he just apologized for when he came up behind me while I was standing near my desk, put his hands on my hips, and rammed his pelvis against my backside over and over, simulating sexual intercourse. Throughout the time that I worked with him, he framed his actions with near daily verbal assaults and emotional manipulations. These inferences felt like threats or declarations like I deserved to have happening to me what was happening to me. It became very difficult for me to trust what I was feeling. Up until recently, I didn't even internalize that what he was doing to my body was sexual assault, because when I went to the CBC for help, what I received in return was a directive that yes, he could do this, and yes, it was my job to let him. The relentless message to me from my celebrity boss and the national institution we worked for were that his whims were more important than my humanity or my dignity. So I came to accept this. I came to believe that it was his right. But when I spoke to the police at the end of 2014 and detailed my experiences with Mr. Gomeshi, they confirmed to me that what he did was, in fact, sexual assault. And that's what Gian Gomeshi just apologized for, the crime of sexual assault. This is the story of a man who had immense power over me and my livelihood, admitting that he chronically abused his power and violated me in ways that violate the law. Unquote. That was Catherine Burrell's statement following Gian Gomeshi's public apology for the damage that he caused her and her career. So with that, this is a local band, Yokes, with their song, "The Criminal Justice System is Broken." Content warning, this song contains many curse words, so consider tuning out if that sort of thing bothers you. My response to Gian Gomeshi's new podcast announcement on Twitter. Once again, don't listen to it. Don't dignify him with listens. And yeah, if anyone on the internet deserves to be trolled, it's that man. Up next, I've got an interview with the organizers of the best queer parties in East Vancouver. This is a chat with the folks who organize Open Relationship. Once again, you're listening to Shoes on a Wire on CITR 101.9 FM.
If you're part of the LGBTQ community, you know how important queer-friendly spaces are for enjoying nightlife. The West End and Davie Street are historically gay neighborhoods and home to many of Vancouver's gay-friendly clubs. But if you're not a gay man, sometimes these clubs don't feel welcoming. This is where the East Van queer party scene comes in. Safety, accessibility, and the buddy system. These ideas are all central to the organizing that goes into Queers and Beers, Denim Vest, Man Up, and coming up this Sunday on April 16th, Open Relationship, Tender Futures. I got on the phone with the organizers of these parties to ask a few questions about their approach. Here's my chat with Rin, Mel, Emily, and Paige.
So this is Rin, otherwise known as Penn Fields from Queers and Beers. And the other person is Mel, who is one half of Denim Vest. And then also joining us in the room, if they should feel so inclined to jump in, is also Emily, the other half of Denim Vest, and also Paige, who is Man Up.
All right. Well, first of all, why don't you tell me what all of those parties are for people listening who wouldn't already know?
Yeah, so I can tell you a bit about Man Up. I'm also a Man Up performer. It is a gender variety show that happens the last Friday of every month at the Cobalt, kind of like a drag spectacular that's grown into all different types of performance. Great dance party, great shows, a lovely community-based space for queer performers.
So, Mel here. Denim Vest is a queer sweaty dance party. We'd like to say that it's a party for the people. A lot of the work that we do is centered around talking about community-determined access and trying to figure out what are the things that would bring people out that usually make it hard to find those spaces in, like, more public spaces, like, I don't know, like clubs or something like that. How do we make it so that we can reduce barriers and get people on the dance floor and just have a fun time? And know that it's also a space that we create together, so it's a community effort.
So Queers and Beers is a hangout party. It is happens seasonally, so five times a year. And it's sort of like a party for people that want to talk rather than dance and, like, make new friends, catch up with old friends, try really great craft beer, have a lot of fun, but not be up till 3 a.m.
Cool. Well, thanks for meeting me on the phone, first of all, taking time out from your busy meeting schedule, planning Open Relationship. Can you tell me about what Open Relationship is and when it's happening?
So Open Relationship is going to be happening this Sunday, April 16th, and it is a party collective dance party, and this Sunday also is long weekend, so we're really excited to be rocking the extra party day vibes.
Mm-hmm. And one of the really cool things about Open Relationship, as you all probably figured out, is that it's a collaboration between Man Up, Queers and Beers, and Denim Vest. And one of the ways that we actually got together was we were working, not only did we know each other as friends, but we were also working with each other as organizers to figure out what are all the things that are going on in queer organizing right now. You know, like talking about gentrification, talking about anti-black racism, talking about appropriation, talking about different ways that solidarity can happen in party organizing. And we were all supporting one another in that, trying to figure out what systems could look like that in terms of how do we collaborate with each other so that we can work collectively with each other to figure out how partying can be more accessible. And then at the end of the day, we were like, hey, what the hey, why don't we just start our own party? And so that was why we're actually called Open Relationship, because it's up. As Rin says, we're poly party. We're party poly?
Party poly.
Yeah, I don't even know.
So this is the second ever Open Relationship. The first was Up Yours 2016 on New Year's Eve. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Actually, it's funny because all of us were sort of tentatively talking about if our individual parties did want to do something for New Year's Eve. And New Year's Eve for organizers is such a wild card that we are all sort of sitting around being like, are you going to do New Year's Eve? Are you going to do New Year's Eve? And then we're like, why don't we all just do New Year's Eve? It sort of like was born out of that. And then, yeah, it's been really great working with other organizers. And I think that sometimes it can be a little bit isolating to be a party organizer. And it's been such a like wonderful way to generate conversations and support each other.
Now, one thing that I've noticed that's notable is that these are queer parties and they almost exclusively happened in East Van. So why do you think there was the necessity for these events to get started, and how did you decide to do it yourselves?
Well, I can talk a little bit about, like, I think Queers and Beers really came out of the necessity for there to be more, like, hangout spaces in East Vancouver, and, like, because they're like a pub, like a queer pub, people from it like have really been craving sort of that sort of connection level. And so like that was sort of the necessity in East Vancouver why Queers and Beers was brought to be. And I'm sure Mel has something to say about Den and Vest.
Yeah, actually, one of the reasons why Emily and I started Den and Vest was because we were having conversations with each other, I think maybe it was in 2014, talking about queer spaces that, you know, like it was hard to go to a place where we felt safer in. And both Em and I identify as queer femmes. So, you know, like there would be places where we would go, but then, it, you know, like there would be really gross misogynist things happening, like, oh, why can't we ever find a place where we're not going to get groped or anything like that? So I have a background in doing organizing, specifically around creating spaces for queer folks of color. And in the past, my friends and I organized and created a collective called QTpocalypse, which also ran dance parties as well. And so when Em and I were thinking about who are the communities that we want to create spaces for and who are the communities that there aren't often spaces for, especially in Vancouver LGBTQ scenes, we were specifically thinking about our own femme communities that we were a part of, also the QTPOCs, Indigenous folks, people with disabilities, and stuff like that. So that, yeah, that's a really, really big contributor to why we wanted to do Den and Vest. And also to make it a playful space as we're talking about all the political stuff, because we're also wanting to make it a healing space that's fun. And in doing all the political revolutionary stuff, you can also have a big sweaty dance party where you can just hang out and have fun with everyone too. So sometimes that's like a thing that people think can't happen at the same time, but with Den and Vest, we've definitely figured out that yes, it can. Ha ha.
Well, on the note of accessibility, reading through the Facebook event page for Open Relationship, there is a really detailed description of the buddy system and lots of other accessibility information for attendees. Can you talk about what the buddy system is and where it came from?
Yeah, totally. Actually, we're going to pass you off to Emily, who's part of Den and Vest, to talk about the buddy system.
Oh,
great.
Yeah, so I'm Emily. I'm the other half of Den and Vest. Along with Mel. So one great thing about the buddy system and like connecting it to Open Relationship is that it actually was originally started by Paige with Man Up. A couple years ago, they started realizing that they wanted to like have some kind of system in place at Man Up to ensure that their partygoers were, and like the people performing were safe at the party. Because you know, like a lot of times with party-going people get drunk, they get under the influence of things, and if they don't have friends or support network there, it can become kind of unsafe. You can not get home safely. A lot of different things could potentially happen. And so it was essentially created as just like a system to make sure that everybody was safe. And so it's been a big part of Den and Vest, and it's a big part of Open Relationship, and it's kind of grown, especially in the last couple of years with the fentanyl crisis. We've also really started focusing on safer drug use and promoting that, and now we make sure that all of our buddies are Narcan trained, or at least some of us are, and myself and Mel are both Narcan trained, and so we carry Narcan, we have first aid kit, but largely buddies are there just to be a support person for anybody who needs it at the party. So we carry water for people who've overconsumed. We can be the person that a partygoer can come to if they're getting unwanted attention on the dance floor or they're having any kind of issue really whatsoever. So the way that that works is that buddies wear glow bracelets around their wrists, and that's kind of the main signifier. And then with Den and Vest and also Open Relationship, we've taken it one step further, and we've posted posters all over the venue identifying who the buddies are and how to find them. And so we just really want to make sure that they have a presence so partygoers feel like safe and comfortable and able to approach them. So yeah, that's basically the buddy system in a nutshell.
Do you think this is particularly relevant in queer spaces?
I think that any club night could use a buddy system.
Yeah.
And I think maybe because as a queer community, we have faced a lot of, like, violence, and I think that maybe we've sort of seen the need for it, but I feel like a lot of parties could benefit from a buddy system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like, any kind of club environment really should have it. I think that maybe like queers were more inclined to have it just because we are just essentially doing more socially conscious organizing. Like all of our events are kind of born out of a need to carve out safer space in some way or another. But, you know, I think that it's important for any venue or club. And I mean, I don't know what all clubs are like in the city because I don't really go out to clubs on the Granville Strip, but I know that places like Fortune Sound Club do have some of their own systems in place where their staff are trained on, you know, being like inclusive and good towards people of all different genders and sexual orientations, and they also have Narcan training. And also there is an organization, I believe, called Good Night Out, which does kind of similar, like, anti-violence work in the club scene, and specifically around, like, sexual violence and trying to make bouncers and partygoers aware of that issue and combat it. And I know that they, they're an organization that exists in Vancouver and elsewhere. So, yeah, but I think it's important everywhere. And we like kind of spreading the word about it. I know that when Mel and I started doing Denim Fest at the Redgate Art Society, since we started doing it there, they've actually adopted their own buddy system that they have for all of their events, regardless of whether they're Denim Fest or not, which is kind of awesome. And so, yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah, for sure. So Safety aside, what kind of vibe can partygoers expect on Sunday?
Oh, who wants to answer this?
Vibe time. I think the main vibe is just like fun times, dance party, inclusive. We have some absolutely amazing man up go-go dancers. I'm like very excited for that. We have some great visuals, and Strange Fellows is going to be doing a tap takeover, like Queers and Beers. I'm a huge craft beer nerd. I don't know if anyone guessed that from my event, but Strange Fellows is actually going to be helping us set up taps in an art space. We have portable taps, and that's like one of my commitments is I always want like great draft beer pouring. And I think we have the DJs is going to be, we have Body Party, DJ G-Love, and DJ Pony Boy, who's actually, we have Mel from Denim Fest here, who Woo-hoo. Is going to be making their rookie debut as a DJ.
Nice.
Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone? Is it a secret?
Yeah, it's the biggest of the secrets. It's going to be cool, chill vibes.
Our New Year's Eve party was so much fun. It was such good vibes pouring. And one thing that it was packed, I know, that we're really excited about is that we are going to be moving venues. So, like, we are coming into this one at the Beaumont Studios, and then we're probably going to be moving. And it's going to be really fun because I think people, especially the queer scene in Vancouver, we don't have a lot of venues. And I think it's going to be, like, just awesome to go into new spaces and, like, have it be rotating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, and
definitely.
I think, yeah. Vancouver in general doesn't have a lot of venues, and yeah, finding venues that, you know, queer folks are able to come in and, you know, the venue owners are going to be in solidarity of, and, you know, it's going to be accessible. For example, like all the venues that we're doing, obviously we've done it with Redgate, who we work with the Radical Accessibility Mapping Project, also known as RAMP, and we have been using some of their access audits. For example, with Redgate, we were using theirs. And for the Beaumont, for the party happening on Sunday, we've done a whole access audit so people can have a good picture of what is the space like? Are people in wheelchairs or scooters able to navigate? Is the place well lit, et cetera? So you can click on that. It's actually our pinned post on the Facebook.
Wonderful. Okay, so if people want to go, we've convinced them in the last few minutes that they want to go to your party. Where can they buy tickets?
You can check it out on our Facebook. There's a link on our Facebook to a brown paper tickets link. $12 advance, $15 at the door.
So once again, this is at the Beaumont Studios off of
West 5th
and Alberta.
Yeah, I mean, if you have not seen this venue, we are so psyched on it. It is absolutely beautiful, and we are so excited to fill it with all your beautiful faces and get sweaty on the dance floor.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much for your time. And I know I'm going to be there on Sunday. So if listeners want to come out and get sweaty with us, it's going to be a wonderful time.
Cool. Thanks for having
us. Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, totally. Well, take care and good luck organizing. For tickets and more information, search Facebook for Open Relationship Tender Futures.
That was an interview with Rin, Mel, and Emily, who organize Queers and Beers, Denim Vest, Man Up, and now Open Relationship, coming up this Sunday, Easter Sunday, actually, if you want to do something a little alternative for your Easter Sunday evening. Go to a queer dance party in honor of whoever you want, but I'm pretty sure Jesus would approve. It's going to be really fun. You can find more information about it on Facebook if you search Open Relationship Tender Futures. And there are still tickets available. So thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in to the first ever episode of Shoes on a Wire. My name is Madeline Taylor. And if you liked what you heard today, I will be back next week with more content for your sweet ears. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at mjeantaylor or on Instagram at staunchjitters. I'll be back next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Stay tuned to CITR. We've got some great music for you in the next hour. And at 6:30, Anita B. will be on air with Sam Squatch's Hideaway. This song is going to take us out. This is Blood Orange with Chamake. Take care, everyone.
Given was my friend.
Given was my friend.
I keep.